The Alzheimer's Association estimates that last year, Wisconsin had about 110,000 people age 65 and older with Alzheimer's disease. This form of dementia affects people who have it, people who are aging, people who worry about their parents getting it, people whose grandparents can't remember them. We're talking about it this hour on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. And we're taking your calls. What questions about the risks for Alzheimer's disease and dementia do you have? 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Art Walasek is Vice Chair for Education and Faculty Development at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also Director of Psychiatry Residency Training there. His new book is called Behavioral and Psychological Symptoms of Dementia. Dr. Walasek, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. There are so many things about dementia that we don't know. What do we understand about primary risk factors for this kind of memory loss?
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you very much for your interest in this very important topic for our older adult population. I guess I'll just start by talking a little bit about some of the words about dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And first of all, dementia just means some combination of memory loss or other thinking problems and changes in day-to-day functioning. So things like problems with driving or managing your finances or changes like that. So those two things make up dementia. And then the next step is trying to figure out, well, you know, what is the cause of dementia? And you mentioned that the number one cause of dementia is Alzheimer's disease. But there are other causes like medications, alcohol, depression, other medical problems like thyroid issues and sleep problems and so on. So one of the things that we do is try to figure out, well, why is this person experiencing dementia and are there some things that we can do about it? So in terms of prevention, you know, what are some of the risk factors? You know, we look a lot at things like medications that people are taking. So are there medications that could be prescribed or over the counter that might be affecting the person's memory? And if so, can we get rid of those medications? Can we simplify the person's medication regimen and maybe get back some of their memory and functioning? We look at things like alcohol use, which is sort of a complicated issue, but basically, you know, too much alcohol use is going to lead to problems with memory and day-to-day functioning as well. So cutting back on alcohol use and so on. So those are some of the first things we would start to think about.
So because there are so many factors that can cause dementia, and then we have Alzheimer's that we're talking about, you know, how do we definitively say that someone has Alzheimer's? Is there a clinical test or is it mainly psychological testing and having doctors put the pieces together?
Yeah, great question. And that's one of our kind of main endeavors in many different research centers. For example, the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at UW is, can we identify folks early on, even before they have any symptoms, that they may have Alzheimer's disease or are at risk of getting Alzheimer's disease? So right now it remains what we call a clinical diagnosis. So that means that, as you said very nicely, we're trying to put together the pieces of the puzzle. Does this history seem to make sense in terms of Alzheimer's disease? So that's usually a gradual onset of the loss of memory and other thinking functions with then an associated change in day-to-day functioning. And then we rule out some of these other things that I mentioned earlier, like medications or thyroid problems and so on. We'll usually administer some sort of testing of memory. So questions about, you know, being able to remember a certain number of words or come up with a list of animals. There are various tests like this that we'll do. And in more complex situations, we might have the person do more formal testing, something called neuropsychological testing, to try to assess where their memory is at. So that's the current standard. The hope, and we're probably not super far away from this, is that Either there'll be a brain imaging test, something like a PET scan of the brain that would help us with this, or even a blood test, you know, just a simple blood test that we could draw and tell us, is it likely that this person has Alzheimer's disease? So those aren't there yet, but that's the hope that we'll be there soon.
Dr. Art Walasek is a geriatric psychologist and a dementia care expert, and we're talking about memory loss this morning and how we can try to figure out if there are some lifestyle changes that we could do to mitigate our risk. And we are wanting to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Does Alzheimer's disease or dementia of any kind run in your family? What are you worried about? Maybe receiving a diagnosis later in life? What are you doing to prepare now? Ask your question at 800-642-1234. Join our conversation this morning. Dr. Walasek, is dementia inevitable?
It is not inevitable. So the most powerful risk factor for dementia, unfortunately, is aging. And that's not something we can do anything about at this point. But it is not an inevitable part of aging. A good number of folks who get older do not ever develop dementia. They maintain their cognition and their ability to function daily. So that's the good news. It's not something that we're all going to eventually get.
And so if you are at risk, what are some of the things that we've started to talk about maybe changing in our lives that could mitigate that risk or take that risk that we are one of those people down?
Absolutely. So, and I think that's a really important message that as best as we can tell, there are probably some things we can do in midlife, even in later life, related to diet and exercise and also kind of mental or cognitive stimulation and social stimulation as well that might be helpful. So I'll cover each one of those. So with exercise, you know, maybe not surprisingly, exercise, it's good for the heart, it's good for the brain as well. And so a regular exercise routine can be quite helpful in terms of kind of promoting good brain health and even showing things like better blood flow to a part of the brain that has to do with memory. It's called the hippocampus. It's involved in helping us store new memories. So people who exercise more may have better blood flow to that area, which in turn means that their memory may be better over time as well. And there's very little downside to exercise. So a good, healthy exercise routine, even beginning in midlife or even late life, could help with reducing the risk of developing dementia. So that's a very exciting area. And even people who are starting to develop some memory problems, getting them physically active might be of some benefit with respect to their memory, and certainly other benefits with respect to like their strength and their balance and their mobility and independence and so on. So that's exercise. On the diet side of things, we don't know for sure, but it seems like the closer you can be to a Mediterranean diet, the better. So we know the benefits of Mediterranean diet with respect to heart health and preventing heart attacks. And the same is probably true of brain health and preventending dementia. So that's being studied right now.
And Dr. Walasek, I'm going to jump right in here and we'll pause on this and come right back to it in just a moment. We're talking with Dr. Art Walasek, who's a geriatric psychologist and a dementia care expert. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Are you coping with dementia, someone in your family, or maybe you have a recent diagnosis? How are you working with the people in your life to plan for care? What are your questions about the risks for Alzheimer's disease? 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. This conversation continues here on The Morning Show. Next Saturday is the summer solstice. It's the day we have the most amount of daylight from sunrise to sunset. And advocates for people with Alzheimer's disease claim that longest day for awareness because they're fighting the darkness of this kind of dementia. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're talking about how lifestyle changes might help prevent a disease that robs us of our memories and changes our emotional control. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What are your questions about the risks for Alzheimer's disease and dementia? Dr. Art Walasek is a geriatric psychologist and a dementia care expert, and we're talking this morning about that. And Dr. Walasek, you were just talking about the Mediterranean diet and how we know how it can be good for the rest of the body, but how does it possibly affect the brain and help us stave off Alzheimer's?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, so the Mediterranean diet is, you know, basically it's kind of getting as close as possible to, avoiding fatty foods and fried foods. And unfortunately, things like cheese, unfortunately for us Wisconsinites, and getting closer to fruits and vegetables and olive oil and nuts and so on. And we don't know the exact sort of mechanism. What's the link between that healthier diet? You know, one possibility might be having more omega-3 and less omega-6 fatty acid in one's diet. But it does seem like folks who can stay closer to that diet may be at lower risk of developing dementia. And even this is being tested now, when people start to have some memory problems, switching over to that diet may have some benefit as well. And again, it's, you know, like exercise, there's probably little to lose in switching over to that diet anyway. You get heart benefits and probably get some brain benefits as well from that.
What are you thinking about as you watch the spread of COVID-19? It's been a difficult time for a lot of people. How could this pandemic affect people in terms of risk of dementia?
Yeah, it's been, the pandemic itself has been obviously incredibly difficult in lots of different ways. For older adults, one link is that COVID-19, especially in people with dementia, may actually kind of increase their chances of having more confusion. They may develop a condition called delirium, which is an acute change in how someone is thinking. It's even possible that their kind of older adults are maybe less likely to show up with the classic combination of fever and cough and shortness of breath, and more likely to show up with some confusion. So it's something that we as physicians, we in psychiatry and so on, have been really mindful of. You know, could this older adult with dementia who's now more confused, is COVID a possible cause of that? So that's one way. I think the broader way that we've seen issues arise is with the very appropriate, correct, understandable response to helping protect people from COVID-19 by reducing contacts with others, increasing social distancing, wearing masks, and so on, is it is resulting in a fair amount of isolation and loneliness, certainly changes to routine and structure. And so that would get us worried about things like, are people going to start to get depressed? Are they going to have agitation or other problems with behavior? Because their normal routine is now thrown off. And one thing that's really helpful for people with dementia is to have good structure, good routine, know the people that they're working with on a regular basis. And those things have been, unfortunately, thrown off in the last few months with the pandemic.
What about the role of trauma?
Yeah, great question. So so trauma can cause, in extreme cases, can cause a condition called PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. And that does seem to result in an increased risk of dementia. Trauma suggests that a person has been under an incredible amount of stress, either one big trauma or a lot of repeated stress over time. And though we all face stress and have to cope with it, that kind of extreme stress can leave a mark in the form of PTSD, depression, anxiety, other mental health conditions. And then those in turn may also increase the risk of dementia. So there probably is some connection there. The other way that shows up is that when people who've been traumatized develop dementia, we may have to think carefully about how to best help them out, because it's possible that our well-meaning interventions could actually bring back some of the memories of the trauma or may heighten their anxiety. So there's a concept of trauma-informed care in mental health. So thinking about assessing a person's trauma history and then changing the way you intervene, you respond to them based on that. And that certainly applies in people with dementia as well, or at risk of developing dementia.
We're talking with Dr. Art Walasek, who's a geriatric psychologist and a dementia care expert, and we're discussing risk factors and what we can do to maybe adjust the amount of risk we have when it comes to developing Alzheimer's disease. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about risks for Alzheimer's disease? Maybe dementia runs in your family. What questions do you have? 800-642-1234. And Dr. Walasek, before we move on from trauma, I do want to ask, if we have experienced trauma and we know it might be an increased risk factor, then is there anything we can do to try to, you know, stop it from being one of our risk factors? I mean, is getting help for that going to have long lasting effects, not just for us emotionally, but when it comes to Alzheimer's?
That's a great question. And our great hope that by effectively treating things like post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, anxiety, other medical conditions, mental health conditions, by addressing those things, that we can reduce the risk of the person developing dementia. Even if we can't, I mean, there are many other really good reasons to address trauma and PTSD and depression and anxiety, including improving the person's quality of life, their sense of self-worth, their ability to function in day-to-day life and have healthy relationships. So absolutely, I would encourage anyone with trauma or with a mental health condition to go seek appropriate treatment for that, for a number of reasons, including hopefully promoting and preserving brain health.
Rob from Radisson is ready to join our conversation. Hi, Rob.
Hello, thanks for the program. What I do is I exercise every day. I walk two miles, and now I'm riding my bike, and I'll be 71 this year. But when I walk, I inhale deeply for 6 steps, and then I exhale deeply for 6 steps to oxygenate my blood. And then, in addition, I meditate a couple times a day, which I've been doing since I'm 20 years old. And in meditating, you stop the world so you don't think about anything. And then that gives you an opportunity to relax your mind.
Yeah, Rob, thank you.
You lose what you don't use.
Thank you, Rob, for that. We've talked about how exercise can be beneficial. What about things like meditation, Dr. Art Walasek?
That's so great. Thank you, Rob. Thank you for sharing that story. And that's inspiring. Maybe I can start walking 2 miles a day as well after hearing that. You really nicely captured, I think, some of the elements for successful and healthy aging. So that regular exercise routine is wonderful. I love the idea of meditation. And so so mindful meditation has been found to be helpful in a number of mental health conditions. It is being studied now in terms of as a way of reducing negative thinking and maybe helping reduce the risk of dementia as well. So it also, for me, it kind of raises the issue of, Rob said, use it or lose it. So that's exactly right. You know, we think of it in terms of like our muscles, but it's true of our brains as well. And so that raises the role of cognitive exercise, cognitive stimulation. So, things like puzzles and games and social interactions with others as well are really cognitively stimulating. So those kinds of mental exercises can be really helpful for promoting good cognitive health and perhaps reducing the risk of dementia. So Rob, very, very inspirational, great ideas there.
And it sounds like another situation where you may gain some things from it. And certainly the risk of losing something is pretty small.
Exactly.
We're talking about dementia with Dr. Art Walasek. He is a geriatric psychologist and a dementia care expert, and we are taking your calls this hour of the morning show. You can give us a ring at 800-642-1234. Do you have a family member or loved one with dementia? What is your relationship like with them? And how are you thinking about your own mental and physical health as you help care for them and help make decisions? What are your questions about the risks for Alzheimer's disease and dementia? 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina, and our conversation continues ahead here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. This hour, we're talking about how lifestyle and mental health can affect a person's risk for developing Alzheimer's disease. My grandpa died of Alzheimer's dementia in February. It's listed right there on his death certificate. We were fortunate. The worst of the changes to his brain didn't torture him for years. He still knew his wife and his brother just before he died. And as we grappled with the sickness, my Grandpa Roger actually responded well to medication meant to slow the progression of the disease. And yet we wonder, could he have done something long ago to prevent it? Can we now change our behavior to lessen the likelihood that we'll get Alzheimer's? Dr. Art Walasek is a dementia care expert, and he talks with us here on the morning show. We're watching and coping with seeing people we love change because of the disease. And Dr. Walasek, some new research suggests that positive thinking can help prevent the disease. So how do we try to do that when we're faced with some really painful experiences that are also tied to Alzheimer's?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for sharing that story as well. Very, very poignant. And it does lead you to wonder, you know, are there things that I could be doing differently or my family members could be doing differently now to change our risk? Yeah, so there's a study that just came out recently that looked at an idea called repetitive negative thinking. So kind of being stuck with negative thoughts, either worrying too much or something called ruminating, where you kind of think about stuff from the past excessively. And what they found was that the people who had a lot of repetitive negative thinking also seemed to have some of the changes in the brain that we see with Alzheimer's disease. So while we're still trying to figure out the exact mechanism of Alzheimer's disease, it seems like there are changes in the brain called plaques and tangles. Those are things on a microscopic level in the brain that are causing brain cells to die. And in this particular study, people with more repetitive negative thinking also had more plaques and tangles. So got to take a lot of these studies with some caution. This is a study that looked at cross-sectionally at the same time, you know, who are people who had repetitive negative thinking and who had these brain changes. It doesn't necessarily mean that like one leads to the other. You could argue it either way. You could say, well, they're starting to have brain changes and it's worrying them, and that's leading to repetitive negative thoughts, or perhaps the other way around. The hope, this is the study I'd mentioned earlier, this team is now going to be studying mindful meditation for people with these repetitive negative thoughts and seeing if by helping them kind of let go of those thoughts, kind of like Rob was talking about earlier, that maybe that'll help their brain health and reduce their risk of dementia. So it's a really intriguing area, and it kind of, you know, if it pans out, it would suggest that kind of helping address, reduce negative thoughts, let go of some of those negative thoughts might have some healthy benefits for the brain. So really interesting, and stay tuned. I'll be excited to see what comes from those studies.
Yeah, from that preliminary research, we are talking with dementia care expert Dr. Art Walasek, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about your risks for Alzheimer's disease and dementia? Have you and your doctor talked about things that you can do to help lower your risk of developing the disease? What do you want to know? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. You can also email us by sending an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Dr. Walasek, what about, we've talked about mindfulness and positivity. What role does our emotional well-being play into our risk for dementia?
Yeah, great question. So we, you know, we do know that unfortunately, people who suffer from depression, from other mental health conditions like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, they are at higher risk of developing dementia, roughly kind of about a double risk of developing dementia. And the hope would be that if we could successfully treat those conditions, that we could bring their risk down. People with mental illness and without mental illness also smoke. So smoking, tobacco use is also associated with dementia. So probably one of the most powerful interventions that we can do for a variety of reasons, including brain health, is to help people quit smoking. And there are a number of really effective interventions out there. It's hard. It's one of the hardest things to do to quit smoking, but it can have huge health benefits, including with respect to brain health. And I mentioned alcohol earlier as well. So people who drink alcohol excessively, unfortunately, are at higher risk of developing dementia. And again, there are effective treatments for that. There are ways to get help to reduce or eliminate alcohol use. And that, in turn, you can actually demonstrate in people who have been drinking excessively improvements in their memory when they stop drinking. So those are all kind of behavioral health things that we can address and hopefully reduce the risk of dementia.
There are also behavioral health things that we've talked about on this program can stem from stress. There are ways that we try to cope with it. And right now, we have the pandemic. We have protests across the nation against police brutality. There are external stressors living for us when we're living in this time. What are possible mental health outcomes here for someone living with dementia?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so, you know, we're surrounded by stress. You know, we live in stressful environments. And for the most part, you know, most of us can cope with that. However, you know, too much stress certainly is going to be negative physically and emotionally. And certainly we also know that people who live in environments and neighborhoods with greater poverty and stress can have worse health outcomes as well. People of African American descent, Latinx, Native American, all have higher risk of dementia as well. And that's probably due to a complex mix of psychosocial issues, poverty, access to healthcare, access to healthy foods, things that we call social determinants of health. Things like my colleague Gina Green-Harris at the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute is studying, you know, how do we ensure that people in communities of color are also getting their needs addressed with respect to dementia care and brain care. Those communities are affected even more.
Talking with Dr. Art Walasek, who's a geriatric psychologist and a dementia care expert. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Constance from Madison couldn't stay with us, but she called to say that she heard a study that gingivitis is linked to dementia. She wants to know if that's true, if there's a link between dental health and dementia.
That is a great question that I do not know the answer to. I've not heard of that. I mean, oral health is really, it's really important in aging for all kinds of reasons, including ensuring that people get adequate, diet, good nutrition. Lots of medications can cause dry mouth, which in turn can cause problems with dental health. But I'd be intrigued to learn more about this connection between gum disease and dementia risk. I'm not familiar with that.
Interesting. What about pain? That just makes me think about the fact that when your mouth hurts, when you have a tooth that hurts, it is distracting and overwhelming. What about the role of pain when it comes to dementia?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. Pain, unfortunately, gets more and more common as you get older. And pain can contribute to depression, to some behavioral changes in people with dementia. People with dementia may not be able to express their pain in the same way that people with dementia can. So it may come out as withdrawal from activities or getting agitated or easily upset. So we pay a lot of attention to pain and trying to address, well, first of all, figure out why they're in pain. Is it a joint issue? Is it a nerve issue? Is it stomach problems? What is it exactly? And then try to address that, because undertreated, underaddressed pain is a big, big issue in dementia. And it's an addressable thing. I mean, it's something that, you know, we have effective pain remedies out there. And so we can reduce pain and in turn improve people's well-being.
So there may be an additional degree of separation, but not only is pain while experiencing dementia a problem, but pain could lead to some of these other factors that we know increase your risk for dementia?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think that that's absolutely a reasonable way to think about it. People with chronic pain, for example, are at higher risk of developing depression and anxiety. And so that in turn could put them at risk of dementia, too.
What about, circling back to stress, what about chronic stress? Is that similar to chronic pain and how it contributes?
Yeah, so, you know, so we've been fine-tuned over millions of years of evolution to respond to stress. We have all these hormonal systems that activate in the face of stress so that, you know, we can mobilize our body and get ready to respond to stress. So that's good. It's good that we have those systems. We've survived over millions of years with those systems. But if you're chronically under stress, then that system is in overdrive. You're, you know, for example, there's the stress hormone, cortisol. So that goes up under stress, which is good because that mobilizes all these body systems to get ready to act. But if you're chronically under stress, then you may have chronic elevations of cortisol, and that's not good for you. That can lead to heart disease. It can lead to depression. It can lead, actually, high levels of cortisol throughout life can, we mentioned earlier, the hippocampus, the part of the brain that has to do with memory, that's been associated with having a smaller hippocampus and so problems with memory. So definitely chronic stress can have all kinds of negative physical and cognitive consequences.
Dr. Art Walasek is a geriatric psychologist and a dementia care expert, and we have a little more time for your call. So that question that's been sitting on your mind, go ahead and ask it. Pick up the phone, 800-642-1234. What are you thinking about when it comes to Alzheimer's disease? Have you experienced it yourself, or are you seeing dementia in a family member and wondering what you can do next? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, email ideas@wpr.org. This conversation is happening on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. We are talking about Alzheimer's disease, how our current health crisis is affecting people who have it, how we can try to minimize our risk of getting this kind of dementia. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. Our guest is geriatric psychologist and a dementia care expert, Dr. Art Walasek. And John from Madison is on the line with a question for us. Good morning, John.
Hi. I've had many tests done, cognitive tests myself, and I've been told by different doctors I have ADHD, and other ones say I have dementia. So how do I actually find out which one I actually have? How can they actually tell, you know, okay, some people say, all right, I've got ADHD, and others say dementia.
John, thank you for that question. Dr. Walasek, John's trying to figure out which diagnosis is causing which problems.
Yeah, thank you, John, for raising that question. So ADHD is a condition wherein people have difficulty with focus or concentration, And then that in turn makes it difficult to make plans, to kind of do your day-to-day life. And it can sometimes be a little bit confusing because some dementias can also present with problems with attention. So there can be some overlap. And so it does come up, you know, sometimes trying to sort these things out. Usually the way we'd go about doing this is getting a comprehensive assessment in a geriatric memory clinic, where we would, with the person, really get a really good history. ADHD, for example, usually arises by age 12. And so like a later onset of ADHD would be pretty uncommon. For example, we might get some brain imaging, like an MRI, to help us sort that out. And then some good cognitive testing, which it sounds like, John, you've had some of that already. But our colleagues in, we as psychiatrists work with our colleagues in psychology and neuropsychology to try to figure out, you know, how's this person's memory, how's their language, how's their attention, and then using those clues to help us sort out what might be the cause, and hopefully, you know, then disentangle something like ADHD from dementia. So, John, I'm sorry to hear about the how confusing that's been in terms of sorting out a diagnosis, and I hope that further assessment will help out.
Yeah, John, thanks for your call at 800-642-1234. We've also got Chris from New Berlin on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thank you so much for this program. It's fascinating. I just have a curious question. I have MS, and I know I have plaques, but I was on a drug for 5 years, and my doctor took me off of it thinking or hearing that it may lead to dementia. So I'm thinking, ooh, how do I find out if I was affected, and how do I find out about whether I'm leading to dementia?
Well, Chris, thank you. Dr. Walasek.
Yeah, Chris, thank you very much. Wonderful question. And it turns out those are two different kinds of plaques. So people with MS, or multiple sclerosis, a condition where the neurons, the brain cells, they have these sheaths around them, and those start to break down, and then that causes some problems within the brain and then the spinal cord. And people get plaques from these areas that had been inflamed within the brain. So thankfully, that's a different kind of plaque than the plaques in Alzheimer's disease. So those two things are not directly related to each other. People with MS can have problems with their memory, and that, you know, perhaps that's what your doctor was concerned about. But I'm not sure about a kind of a direct link between MS and Alzheimer's disease. And again, thankfully, those are two different kinds of plaques we're talking about.
Chris, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234 as we talk about dementia with expert Dr. Art Walasek, as we are trying to figure out how to mitigate our own risk and how to handle other things. Dr. Walasek, both of our last callers mentioned other conditions, other health conditions. Many people have different things that they are challenged with when it comes to their health. How should we think about those other conditions when it comes to dementia? Is it an automatic up of the risk factor?
Yeah, great question. And there are a couple things we haven't talked about that are known to be risk factors for dementia, and that includes high blood pressure and diabetes. So having both of those under good control would hopefully help reduce the risk of dementia. There's another interesting one out there, which we don't think about a lot, but it's hearing loss. So, you know, as you get older, your hearing is not as good for a variety of different reasons. And though there probably isn't like a direct link between hearing loss and Alzheimer's disease, if you're not taking in as much information because you've lost your hearing, that's going to affect your thinking. Or if you have to use more of your kind of brain space to think about, well, what is this person actually telling me right now? That's going to kind of divert away from other things like memory and decision making and so on. So we really try to think about, as people get older, their hearing, and are they having trouble with hearing? And if so, we should address that, because that's going to help with getting more information into their brain and help their cognition out as well.
William emailed us to ask if obesity is associated with a higher risk of Alzheimer's.
William, you must be looking at my notes, because under high blood pressure and diabetes, I have obesity written down. So, and right above hearing loss. So yes, yeah, obesity is also associated with a higher risk of dementia. So that actually links really nicely to the earlier part of our conversation around diet and exercise as well. So to the extent that diet and exercise can help with reducing obesity, then that should help with dementia risk too.
And as we have been talking, we've kind of bounced between handling dementia, living with dementia, and also that midlife time where it sounds like we can make more changes that could lower our risk. Why is so much of the research focused on that point in our lives?
Well, I think that, you know, it's a critical time. So, you know, our current way of thinking about Alzheimer's disease is that the brain processes are starting well before we have any symptoms. So if we can catch people then, so before they have memory loss, before they have changes in day-to-day function, but they're starting to have some brain level changes, or even before then, they're at risk of having those brain changes, but not there yet, then that's where we can really make a dent on this disease and reduce those really high rates that you're talking about in Wisconsin and elsewhere by catching people in midlife, making some lifestyle changes there, and then hopefully reducing the risk of dementia.
What kind of questions are researchers, are doctors really looking for answers right now when it comes to dementia and preventing it?
So first is finding who are the folks who are at risk. So far what we have right now is family history. So for example, if a parent had Alzheimer's disease, then that person is at higher risk. We can do some brain scanning. This is not clinically available, but in research settings, we can actually measure the amount of amyloid, which is a protein that is thought to be involved in Alzheimer's disease, and find people who have higher amounts of amyloid in their brain. And they're not necessarily going to develop Alzheimer's disease, but they're at higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. So early detection, and then the holy grail will be finding a treatment for those people at higher risk to prevent them from going down the pathway of Alzheimer's disease.
You say the holy grail, but you also sound optimistic when you say that. Like there's real potential that could happen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, this country and really the community at large has really invested a significant amount of resources into finding the cause and the cure for Alzheimer's disease. So absolutely, we have many, many researchers all around the world and right here in Wisconsin working on finding the cause and the cure for Alzheimer's disease. So yes, I'm optimistic.
Dr. Walasek, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your attention to this really important topic.
Dr. Art Walasek is Vice Chair for Education and Faculty Development at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also Director of Psychiatry Residency Training there. He's a geriatric psychologist and a dementia care expert who's talked with us this hour about dementia and how we can look to prevent the disease that takes our memories. Up next on The Morning Show, we get a COVID update from an epidemiologist and communicable diseases expert. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to the Ideas Network.